Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle podcast. I'm your host, Iris Amatakos. We're back again with a lot of football talk to speak about, which will be great as always. I hope you all have had a great week. I hope you've all had a fantastic Easter week as well. So happy Easter for those who celebrate. I hope you guys had some awesome chocolate, because fuck, Easter chocolate's just... I think I saw this study actually, like the why Easter chocolate was better. I didn't read it, but I think I saw that there's an actual reason why Easter chocolate tastes better. So if you guys love Easter chocolate but don't love normal chocolate, there's probably a reason behind that, because for whatever reason, they just taste better. But yeah, I hope everyone has enjoyed their Easter break. I hope everyone enjoyed the football over the weekend. A couple of big games to speak about, which we'll be covering a lot in depth, which I think has a lot of title race ramifications as always. But apart from that, I hope everyone is well as always. Before we kick things off, I implore you all to subscribe to the Two Foot Tackle podcast on TikTok, Instagram, or subscribe to it on YouTube, and then follow it on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. All the socials, relevant social links, are in the description of the YouTube video, and then of course all the audio platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, the whole nine yards. Once again, does mean more than the world. Let's crack on. What do we have to speak about today? Not a whole lot on the run sheet, in all honesty. But we have enough where we could definitely speak about a fair bit, and mainly it's got to do with the City versus Arsenal and subsequent, or the Liverpool versus Brighton game, but the subsequent City versus Arsenal game. I want to go over to Germany and speak about, I think, a couple of things that happened over there. Come back to Australia and speak about some A-League things as well. Now, before we kick things off, fit check, as always. I'm rocking I don't know exactly what year. If I had to guess, it would probably be around about the mid-2000s, early 2010s. It's a Barcelona training hoodie with the Qatar Foundation sponsor. This jumper is a jumper. So it's actually not, it's actually the first time I've worn a non-kit. This jumper is not the most aesthetically pleasing jumper. Like, it's got the thumb thing, so it's got like the thumb kind of sleeve in there. It's a very nice jumper. I can't complain. I definitely can't complain. With a navy blue base, the bright yellow / gold coloring with a tick, the Qatar Foundations, the badge, the crest fits there perfectly. The kind of crew neck, kind of tight around the neck collar, which is really good. But I think what I love most about this hoodie, or this jumper, I should say, is the fact that this kind of is a piece of memorabilia, in a sense, from the best football team I think has ever existed. Like, the period from about, like, late 2000s to the early 2010s, it was the best Barcelona team. Like, was one of the best football teams ever. Probably the best Barcelona team ever. Definitely the best Barcelona team ever. One of the best football teams ever. When I think of this kind of hoodie, or like this kind of jumper, I think of Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, David Villa, Messi, Pedro, Victor Valdez, Puyol, Dani Alves. Like, it's just superstar after superstar after superstar after superstar. Elite footballer after elite footballer, playing the best football, winning Champions Leagues at Wembley, winning Champions Leagues in... Where else did they win it? They won it against United in... Was that in Porto? I feel like it was... for some reason, I want to say Porto. But regardless, they were winning like Champions Leagues, winning leagues, just constantly doing what... Like, constantly being... It was in Rome. It was at Stadio Olimpico in Rome, the tournament over United, but just like constantly leveling up and being the best and most aesthetically pleasing football team to watch. And it's also a period of time in which I have a lot of nostalgia about football, that kind of like early 2010s, 2012, 2013, 2011. That's really my football nostalgia, playing like even FIFA from that time, even just the tournaments at that time, that's 2010 World Cup. Even a little bit later with 2014 World Cup, like just a lot of very good kind of footballers in that time, very kind of memorable footballers and iconic footballers at that time. And I think this jumper kind of commemorates that as always. Once again, the yellow is showing up a little bit greener, but it's very much a gold yellow. But once again, I'm digressing as always. Fuck, I don't digress enough on this podcast. I should really do it more often. But let's kick things off. Let's actually start to speak about. Let's go straight into. What should we go? Let's go to the Prem and let's speak about Arsenal. Or let's speak about Liverpool versus Brighton, and then we'll speak about the Arsenal game because this has a lot of ramifications on the title race. This is one of the biggest mornings in title race history, especially for this kind of especially for this season, but in the last couple of seasons, you will very rarely see a more consequential kind of 5 or 6 hours of football, because that. Liverpool hosted Brighton, and then Man City hosted Arsenal, and both games had and have massive ramifications for the title race. Liverpool went in 1 point clear of Arsenal. Was it 1 point clear? Yeah. No, two. No, they went equal on points. Yeah, they went equal on points with Arsenal. Just trying to do the math in my head based on the current. They're now 2 points clear, so they would have had to make up the 2 point gap, which they did. And then they were obviously 3 points clear, or they were four points clear of City, I think. And now they're 3 points clear, or 5 points clear. I don't know. Regardless, as things stand right now, Liverpool are 2 points clear of Arsenal, 3 points clear of City. And it's very tight. And with some of the fixtures that both teams have coming up, it will be very interesting to see whether or not either team can kind of maintain that and can kind of like really settle their nerve in a sense, and kind of like if Liverpool can hold their nerve and allow themselves to maintain this lead, which I think is going to be very interesting, because a lot of people probably always have had City as kind of the best team in a sense, like in terms of pound for pound team. A lot of people have always had City as the best in this title race, whereas Liverpool probably have always been that team that I think a lot of people always have a little bit like one step off, whereas Arsenal are that plucky underdog. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not Liverpool, with this lead that they've got right now, with what, how many games to go? With 9 games to go, whether or not they can hold on to it. I guess it will just have to be a wait and see for that one. But yeah, Liverpool versus Brighton, we'll touch on that game first. Danny Welbeck, 2 minutes in with a goal to give them the lead. Very, very kind of upsetting the apple cart, not going to how the script kind of was meant to go, which is very typical in games like this that decide title races in a sense. They don't go how they're normally meant to go in a way. But then Diaz, not long after, before half an hour mark, scores, and then Salah with a beautiful kind of assist from Szoboszlai. Oh, it was from McAllister. Beautiful kind of playthrough. Salah scores 2-1. Goal disallowed as well later on, if I'm not mistaken. It was Diaz maybe with the goal that was disallowed. I can't quite remember. But regardless, they did enough to hold on when they needed to. It was on the 73rd minute, Diaz's goal ruled out for offside, or ruled out for whatever reason. But they did enough. They did what they had to do to hold on. Liverpool right now, probably, I was like, normally Liverpool are the hipster's choice when it comes to teams in the title race, because City were that just like ruthless, robotic, I will just win, because Pep is ruthless and the way that, and their spending's ruthless and whatever. And Liverpool have always been that kind of hipster's choice, like when they won the league in like the first COVID season, it was very much a hipster's kind of Premier League win. And then subsequently, like a lot of the results from this year have kind of lend themselves towards that. Liverpool probably haven't been the best team all year. They've probably been the third best team all year out of Arsenal and City and themselves. But they currently find themselves 2 points clear. I don't see them right now not being able to go ahead with this, right? Not being able to kind of go ahead with this and take it forward. I would actually go as far as saying they're exit from the FA Cup probably helps them a little bit, especially towards the back end of the season, because they won't have that to worry about. They've got a couple of tough games, like they've got a Roma, they've got Everton, West Ham, Tottenham, and then Villa, which is obviously very tough. They've got United away, which I think if they can get past United away, and if they can get past United away, which will be tough, because United will want to do everything in their power to make sure that Liverpool don't win the league. If they can get past that, I don't see it slipping away for them right now. I think the draw this in the subsequent game is, I think, shows the I think the draw in the subsequent game shows right now that Liverpool are in the box seat, and that if Liverpool just play their best, they win the league. And I think we've also seen throughout the season that Liverpool are a team that are susceptible to upsets, but I think are also a team that can and have shown their abilities to just be ruthless in their pursuit for success. So I think what we saw in this game against Brighton, like, they went behind, but like straight away they got the goal back. And while they didn't, they dominated the game, Brighton, of course, are a team that are very capable and are very capable of beating good teams, and are very capable of carving teams open and really putting good teams on the back foot. They've had a slightly underwhelming season this season, but traditionally they have been, especially over the last couple of years. And that they were able to pick them apart with ease, and they were able to really dominate them and not be flustered by the potential upset of Brighton, but also not be flustered by the 1-0 deficit which they had early on at home, upsetting the uppercut, etc., etc. So I think, I genuinely think it's Liverpool to lose. Like, I don't see a world in which, as things stand right now, Liverpool drop enough points to not win the league. I can't see that happening. I really can't see that happening. And while it could happen, like, they've got United in 2 games' time, United could very easily win that game at Old Trafford, and all of a sudden the title race is flipped on its head. But I think Liverpool, with the Klopp motivation in particular, are just so unbelievably kind of ruthless and driven on this title that I just can't see them dropping points in enough points in a way to lose the league. Like, I can definitely see them drawing a couple of games. Like, they got Villa, which will be tough. Everton is always going to be tough. United's always going to be tough just because of the circumstance of those 2 games. I can see them dropping points, but I can't see them dropping enough points to not win the league, because I also think we saw that City and Arsenal are both very fallible. And I think that drawing that game didn't really do either team a good service, in my opinion. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Because I struggle to think of a scenario in my head that Liverpool let this choke. And subsequently, because of the fact that City and Arsenal drew in the way that they did, with neither team really showing ruthless intentions going forward. City hosted Arsenal, 0-0 draw. Nothing really going either way. Like, nothing really going the way of either team. It was a very, I wouldn't say lackluster. It was lackluster. It was boring. It was a boring game of football. It was. And a lot of people could sit back and go, oh, but fucking tactically, Pep Guardiola did this and fucking XYZ. I don't care. I do care, because I do care about the tactical side of the game. But I think in games like this, in a game that has so much immediate ramifications, it's almost like a quarterfinal or a semi-final of a cup competition, this type of game. You just want to see results. You just want to see goals, because that's what's going to win games, and that's what's going to get teams higher up the table. I thought both teams came into the game with the approach of not losing, and I think City have had that mentality for a lot of big games, especially over the last couple of years, and I guess that's probably why they've done so well and have had the success that they've had, is because they've just been ruthless in a sense of, not ruthless, but have been so conservative, maybe, in a way of, in big games and in games that have immediate ramifications for the title, when it comes to if this team wins, they jump us. rather than games against like Bournemouth where, or games against like a Brighton where if City lose to Brighton, then Liverpool would have to win their game to jump them. That's not immediate ramifications. The immediate ramifications of if City lose to Liverpool, Liverpool jump up, Liverpool, City or Arsenal or whoever. They have shown this ability to just not lose those games. And I think that is very, while not exciting and pleasing on the eye, it's commendable. Because, man, like, you would rather not lose that game than not win it. Yeah, you'd rather not lose that game than not win it. And I think it's the mentality of a successful team. It's the mentality of a successful team. So you can't criticize them for it. And I think Arsenal probably had a little bit more, I wouldn't say license, to be a little bit more defensive, but they were playing away from home. It's not their full team playing, in my opinion. They've got a couple of players who aren't there and who came off the bench and who probably would have started if they were fully fit or whatever. I think Arsenal probably had a little bit more of an excuse to be a little bit more defensive and to kind of be a little bit more conservative, but they didn't. In fairness to them, they weren't overly conservative and they didn't completely park the bus. They were safe in their approach, and City were also safe in their approach as well. So this is that's what happens when you get kind of a dogfight in which neither dog wants to kill each other. It's kind of just like making sure that neither team makes a mistake in order for them to lose the game. Yeah, it was a weird game of football. Had so much hype around it, so much excitement. It's probably the last title race decider in a sense, because Arsenal City and Liverpool do not play each other again. Like, so this was the last time we would see immediate fallout from a game, which is a little bit disappointing because you want to see games like this have like immediate fireworks and etc. But it didn't. I guess just one of those things. Arsenal probably have the toughest kind of fixture run home. I just saw they've got Brighton, they've got Villa, they've got Chelsea, Tottenham, United, Everton. Everton's always tough, considering they're kind of like any team in the relegation battle will be tough towards the back end of the season. So yeah, I was more content with Arsenal's performance than I was Man City's. I think City could have had a little bit more in the chamber, could have really gone for a little bit more. I think Haaland was absent, I think Foden was poor, Bernardo Silva was poor, De Bruyne was fine without being extraordinary. I don't think Rodri was fine, Kovacic was a bit poor, got subbed off. I thought the defence held up, and I thought Arsenal's defence held up as well. I thought Gabriel was really good alongside Saliba. Yeah, but it's just disappointing that games like this don't have that ruthless edge. And I think you can blame City a little bit more, or you can blame City more for that than Arsenal, because Arsenal have more of an excuse to be a little bit more defensive when they come up against Man City away from home, regardless of the circumstances, but including the circumstances of the title being decided, basically. Or like, if Arsenal lose this game, they probably can't win the title. Or if City lose this game, they probably can't win the title. So you can't blame them for that from that kind of perspective. But look, I mean, looking forward now, I think I said it, Liverpool, it's Liverpool's to lose. And this game is, it's a real catch-22 for Arsenal and City, because it's a real catch-22 for Arsenal and City, because if they lose this game, they almost can't win the title. But in the same vein, if they win this game, that probably gives them the best chance of winning the title. So in order to try and win that game, you have to risk losing the game. Whereas the draw is kind of the complete middle section of it, where they can still win the league, but they still can lose it. And it's just kind of, it's almost kicking the can down the road in a sense. You're delaying the inevitable seesaw one game further down the track, instead of having it decided now, if that makes sense. Which is a conservative way of approaching it, which I get and I commend. And if I was Arsenal, I'd want that approach. If I was City, I probably wouldn't, because we're away from home and we're at home, sorry. And I think that if I was a City supporter, I think that we would be able to dominate and eventually find a way through. whereas Arsenal probably more content to sit back, like I've said countless times. So Liverpool would be pleased with that result. They extend their gap, which is great. For them, if I was right now coming out of this weekend, you'd be the happiest if you're a Liverpool supporter. You'd probably be the most upset if you're a City supporter. Right now, probably because of the league table as well, but because City probably have it's probably a chance that in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to look back and think, fuck, if only City had gone for a little bit more and had scraped that 1-0 win in the 90th minute, all of a sudden things could turn on their head. Because if City go on and win that game, they're only 1 point behind Liverpool, and all of a sudden Arsenal are back down and are kind of scratching and clawing to maintain their position in the title race, whereas City will establish themselves there, whereas it's kind of roles are reversed in a little bit in a sense. Yeah, interesting title race, and it's going to be a proper three horse race all the way to the end. I don't see any team fully slipping off, and I don't see any team fully slipping off. I think all of them are going to be there or thereabouts, definitely towards the last game week, last two game weeks. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. We've got 9 games left, 2 months of football. Like I said, right now, Liverpool win it for me. Arsenal finish second, and United and City finish third. Right now, in my opinion. So, I guess we'll have to wait and see on that, because it's going to be tight. It's going to be really, really tight. But yeah. That is all for title race chat, I think. Okay, moving on. I want to go to Germany. Bayern Munich lost on the weekend, 2-0 to Borussia Dortmund. They're now 13 points behind Bayer Leverkusen with, I think, 7 or 8 games to go. Also, quickly, by the way, if you can hear drilling and banging, there's works happening just behind this wall next door. So it's Easter Monday and you're doing housework, whatever. Is what it is. But yeah, they're 13 points clear with, I think, 7 or 8 games to go. 7 games to go. Title race all but over. Thomas Tuchel, Bayern Munich manager, has basically come in and said that it's all but over. Now, I don't want to speak about, like, obviously Bayern Munich's a story there, and I'm sure I'll touch on that soon, but I want to speak on Harry Kane. Because fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And this was the one storyline coming out of this, or coming into this season after that transfer happened, where everyone was like, if this happens, something is seriously wrong. And it's Harry Kane going to the unlosable league, playing for the team that wins that league every single time and not winning the league. It's this issue. Now, I want to speak about it from a more legacy perspective, because I think Harry Kane is undoubtedly an unbelievable footballer. One of, if not the best strikers the Premier League's ever seen. His playmaking ability off the charts. Goal scoring ability is ruthless. Not the quickest, but doesn't need to be. His strength, his football IQ is unbelievable. And, like, brilliant number 9. Like, I can't speak highly enough about him as a Chelsea supporter. He's killed us so many times. That goal he scored when it was 5-2 on New Year's Day at the old White Hart Lane was horrendous. That game still gives me nightmares. 5-2 or 4-2 or 5-3, whatever it was. That goal from like 30 yards out, bottom corner. It, freakish stuff, right? And I can't speak highly enough about him as a footballer. But at what stage does legacy and trophies won start to become a conversation? Because realistically, he could have won a Ballon. I feel like I'm gonna be using a lot of past tense in the way that I describe Harry Kane right now, because it feels like this was his chance when it's quite clearly not. Like, he'll probably win the league next year. Like, if we're being honest, he'll probably win the league next year, and this whole conversation will probably be null and void, and he'll finally win it, and Bayern will win the league by 30 points because they bought £600 million worth of good footballers and just win the league again. That's besides the point. Harry Kane could have won the Ballon d'Or this year, right? Very easy won the Ballon d'Or. If he won the league with Bayern Munich, won the Euros with England, went far in the Champions League, and he top goal scorer in a couple of tournaments, he could have easily won the Ballon d'Or, right? Because I don't think, like, we're not in the era anymore where it's Messi and Ronaldo just winning it because they're Messi and Ronaldo. It's actual competition now. So, hey, Harry Kane could have won the Ballon d'Or. If Harry Kane won the Ballon d'Or First English player to win it since Michael Owen. Won the league with Bayern Munich and won the Euros with England, leading them to the first major trophy since 1966. That kind of establishes him, and that kind of puts and casts away all the conversations about he's a great footballer, but what has he won? In one swoop, in 1 year, wins two trophies, goes far in the Champions League, wins a Ballon d'Or. All that talk of he's a serial bottler, never won anything, what's he done, what's his trophy cabinet, all of that goes away. And all of a sudden, he is one of the best footballers, I don't want to say ever, because I think that's an extreme reach. One of the better English footballers of all time, and one of the best strikers that the Premier League has seen, and that, like, in my generation, he's probably up there in the top five strikers in my generation, right? But all of a sudden, England's, I mean, they had a couple of friendlies the other day, or like the last week. They, like, will they win the Euros? I don't know. I still think that they could, but you just don't know. He's not going to win the league. Can they win the Champions League? They've got Arsenal in the next round, which I think they win, but then they've got to versus Real Madrid or City in the semis. And then, I mean, once you get to the final, it's anyone's game. But Real Madrid and City both play pretty good football. Bayern haven't been at their best. So all of a sudden, what has gone from the potential most kind of euphoric summation and the most kind of, or like the perfect strike through, or the perfect silencer, that's the word, the perfect silencer of an argument that has been put against him for a long, long time, close on maybe 5 or 6 years now. It could have been the perfect silencer, but it's almost like in the blink of an eye it's gone, because especially, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the first leg of the Arsenal Bayern Munich game. But if Arsenal turn around and take a 3-0 lead going into the second leg, Bayer Leverkusen extend their lead at the top of the league to 15-16 points, and the league is officially done. All of a sudden, you're like, can England win the Euros? And even if they do win the Euros, does that matter? And then the doubts are creeping into the mind of England. Just don't win. England don't win, and they've got Harry Kane up front, who we've seen right now can't win because he went to Bayern Munich, the team that always wins. And they didn't win. And Tottenham were the best team in England over two calendar years and didn't win the Premier League. How does that happen? They were by far the best Premier League team over two calendar years, 2015 and 2016. They were the best football team in the country and they didn't win the league. How does that happen? Right? Like, it's really weird. It's really weird because can a footballer with so much talent and so much ability be so cursed? Like, I don't know. And this season will hurt his legacy a lot. Like, this season, I don't want to say this season will tarnish his legacy, because he's still got years to go. He could very, very easily still win a couple of trophies, right? But this was the year where it was all meant to piece together. He was meant to go to Germany, win the league comfortably. He was meant to lead Bayern Munich back to the upper echelons of the Champions League. He was meant to lead England to a European Championship victory. And it was meant to be the perfect silencer to the one argument and the one kind of chink in his armor that has been potted at him throughout his whole career, is that the fact that he doesn't win things. This was meant to be the year in which he won everything. And all of a sudden, Arsenal look favourites to go through in the Champions League. Bayern Munich can't win the league. And are England going to win the Euros? I think they will, but will they? Probably not. So, all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, is he not the person and the player? Maybe not person. Is he not the player that we thought he was? Is there something going on? And have we overrated him or whatever? I don't know. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. It truly is. Because he's extremely talented. Absurdly talented. And absurdly talented footballers always get their dues. Always get their kind of, how would I describe it? They always get their reward. And he probably still will end up getting it. But this was the year it was meant to happen, and it didn't happen. So, like, you just don't know these days anymore. You just don't know. Because next year, all of a sudden, by Xavi Alonso could stay at Bayer Leverkusen. They get a couple of good players. They keep a lot, they keep the core nucleus of that squad. They get a couple of players to top up, and all of a sudden, they become a powerhouse, and the league is not a walk in the park anymore. Or, and then England don't win the Euros, and then all of a sudden, he's got to wait 2 more years to get a shot at the World Cup, and doesn't win the league again, and Bayern crash out of the Champions League, and it's happening again, and like and all of a sudden, he's 33 next year, and he's slowing down. He's not striking the ball like he once was. He wasn't moving like he once was. He's half a step behind the game. And all of a sudden, it's slowly losing it now. There's a finite amount of time in which you can win things. And in reality, Harry Kane should have left Tottenham 2 years before he did. And he left Tottenham this year. And he's what? I want to say he's what? 31? He's 30, turning 31 in the off-season. He's lucky he's a player that doesn't rely on pace, so you think he'd probably be at a very acceptable level for another 3 or 4 years. But still, like, it's not easy to win things and to prove doubters wrong when you're 33, 34. It's just a shame because he's so good. Like we don't speak this way about average footballers. We speak this way about the elite footballers because they are the elite footballers for a reason. I don't know. I guess we just have to kind of sit back and watch and ponder his response. Because, look, if he wins the Euros, I think a lot of this is forgotten. And then again, if he wins the league next year, all of this is forgotten as well. So I guess we just have to kind of wait and see when it comes to that. When it comes to that whole thing. I think that's all for Harry Kane. Let's come back to Australia. And I want to quickly speak on the broadcast thing that happened in the A-League. So for those who don't know, it happened on Thursday afternoon, I think, or Friday afternoon, one of the two. The production company that the A-League has signed a contract with to produce the games, not Paramount. Paramount is the broadcasting partner. So there's broadcast, which is the medium through which people watch it, and there is production companies, which is the medium in which it is actually able to be watched, if that makes sense. So the production company that the A-League signed a contract with to produce all the games and film all the games and etc. went under. They folded just like that. And all of a sudden, the league started in two. There was an A-League women's game happening in 26 hours, and we were on the verge of an A-League blackout for the Easter weekend. It was calamitous, and it's another stain on Danny Townsend's history and his reputation. I just want to say, because he signed this contract. There is so much... I'm going to sit here repeating myself. There is so much wrong with the league right now that there needs to be stability in places where it's easy to find stability. Fox had absolutely no issues with their production for the 17 years that they had it. There was issues with the broadcast. Yes. Not issues with the production. All the games were very, very watchable. All the games were watchable. All the games were produced to a high quality standard. That has nothing to do with Fox. Fox are the broadcast. There was issues with the broadcast. There was not issues with the production of the broadcast. All of a sudden, Paramount, there's issues with the production. There's issues with the production. And fucking... Not only is the issue with the production, the broadcast has been a shambles for 2 years, right? It is such an easy way to have stability. It's such an easy way to kind of give back to your fans by just having a solid product that is reliable. And for whatever reason, the APL, the former administration, they said, fuck this. We're going to go with someone that's completely untested and unproven. Why? Because they were so much cheaper than the other people that Fox used. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough if you guys don't have money. Or what's this? You guys spent $30 million on a fucking website? How does that work? How does that work? You know that $30 million? $30 million bucks. It's a lot of money. You can buy like 3/5 of a Fernando Torres for $30 million bucks. And instead of putting it to an app and a website that no one used and no one was ever going to use, because FOTMob exists, how about put it to actually having solid, reliable production for your main kind of thing that you do, which is football games? Just a thought. I don't know. I'm just spitballing ideas here, but I mean, what do I know, right? What do I know? It's just ridiculous. But look, at the end of the day, what more? We can sit here and go in circles about it. What more can we say? Speaking on actual A-League games that happened, I find it pretty funny that Melbourne City can win a game. What did they won a game 7-0. Yeah, I find it pretty funny that Melbourne City can win a game 7-0, lose a game 5-1, win a game 8-1, all in the same year and not make the finals, and lose a game 6-0, all in the same year and not make the finals. I find that pretty funny. They currently sit 2 points out of the top six. They do have a game in hand, in fairness, with a couple of games to go, but I still find that quite ironic. Victory 1 against Perth, 2-1 win. Zinedine Machach is a baller. Daniel Arzani. If Daniel Arzani had a left foot, he'd be the best football player in the world. I'm convinced of this fact. If Daniel Arzani was born ambidextrous in his legs, he would be the best footballer in the world. And like some of the things he can do, he's just fucked. But that's besides the point. that's besides the point. Wellington got their 1-0 win over Brisbane Roar. I think this was like the third earliest goal ever scored in Australian Eastern Daylight Time for the A-League, because the game started at like 12. Didn't the game start at like 12:30 New Zealand time, or like 1 o'clock New Zealand time, which was 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, which, and Cray have scored in the second minute, so it was like 11:02 Australian Eastern Daylight Time, which is like one of the earliest goals ever scored in A-League men's football, which is quite funny. Adelaide got a 4-1 win over Western United. Irukunda hat-trick, freak, just absolute baller. Like, what more do we have to say? Like, how he's not started and played for the Socceroos is beyond me. Graham Arnold, get your fucking shit together. Seriously, it's a joke. It's a disgrace. It's an actual disgrace. But, I mean, just shrug. Adelaide making a late charge for the finals, maybe 7 points away with a couple of games to go. Yeah, probably not going to happen. But you never know. Stranger things have happened. But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting final series for sure, because Wellington Phoenix, Central Coast and Victory are probably the three best sides in it. MacArthur and Western Sydney are actually playing as we speak right now. It's currently 0-0 in the 20th minute. So maybe like MacArthur can jump Victory. No, they can't. Or they can if they win by 8 goals. So, or 9 goals even. Yeah, so it's probably Wellington, Phoenix, Central Coast and Victory are probably the three best teams in it. MacArthur, Sydney and Western Sydney probably the next kind of bracket down. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not City can sneak their way in. Brisbane, probably not. Adelaide, probably not. And then Newcastle, Wellington, just languaging towards the bottom end of the table. But it is what it is. Okay, I think that's enough. It's 3:20. The AFL has started. So I'm going to go downstairs and watch that while editing all this and then doing all the things I need to do for this. But yes, thank you very much for watching another episode of the Two Footed Tackle podcast. I appreciate you all sticking around. If you have, if this is your first episode, thank you. Make sure you subscribe. If this is your 100th, thank you for sticking around once again. But yeah, see you guys next week. Actually, I'm gonna put a PSA out right now. Next week's episode might be either delayed or not here, because I will be going to Adelaide for the weekend, and I will not be returning until Monday during the day, and I will be I'm driving. It's an eight hour drive, so there might be a delayed episode. It might be a Wednesday upload, maybe. I don't know. I'll make sure to update whilst on the socials, of course. So yes, thank you very much for watching another episode of the Two Footed Tackle podcast. Make sure you subscribe and do all that good stuff. It does mean more than the world. Yeah, stay well, stay safe. See you guys next week. Goodbye.